Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartzschrauber, your host. On today's show, the 2016 election, presidential campaigns, and big data. What type of our personal information are campaigns and presidential websites collecting when we visit them? And when we donate to candidates, what type of data are they collecting and why do they want it? Joining me to discuss this is Ashley Holmes, a Tech Freedom intern and graduate student at George Washington University studying global communication. She's also a U.S. Army veteran who is pursuing a master's with a focus in information and communication technology in international affairs and development. And she was previously on the show to talk about drones and humanitarianism. Ashley, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me, Evan.
So, Ashley, most Americans at this point are probably aware that sites like Google and Facebook collect information on them to tailor advertisements and to theoretically improve their products, and that also the NSA and intelligence agencies and law enforcement groups, they're also collecting data for law enforcement purposes. But I guess maybe they're not thinking as much about the data that presidential campaigns are collecting on them. So, what type of information are these campaigns collecting on people who visit their websites, and why do they want this?
Well, Evan, the campaigns are collecting, you know, a varying degree of information from both like their websites and their campaigns. If you visit the website, what you're basically going to be asked for is your email address, phone number, perhaps your address, and you know from that you'll probably get spammed with a with a digital newsletter from the campaign. When you are giving your information over to a mobile application, though, they're going to ask for the same kind of information, but they're also going to take a lot from you, you know, some that you didn't probably explicitly give. You know, they're going to get your name, your phone number, your email address, maybe your zip code so that they can send you information about events in your area. But they're also going to collect a lot of information passively. Things like your mobile ID number. They're going to get information from the web cookies about sites that you visited. Some campaigns are more intrusive than others, though.
So is there a difference between the type of data that's collected when I visit a website on my desktop using a browser and the type of data that's collected when I download a mobile app for a campaign, which is a newer concept than campaign websites, which go back a while?
Well, Evan, it depends on the campaign app. You know, some are a lot less intrusive than others. For example, with Bernie Sanders, he doesn't ask for a lot of information. But, you know, if you're going to download the Ted Cruz app or if you downloaded the Rand Paul app, they're going to ask for a lot more. And they're going to be doing a lot more of the stuff that kind of, you know, Google does with like digital marketing and that kind of stuff.
And Bernie Sanders is an interesting case because he's one of the few candidates, if not the only candidate, who has raise concerns about, you know, data collection by private tech companies like Google and Facebook, whereas most of the other candidates have either defended NSA collection or attacked NSA collection like Rand Paul, but they haven't really talked about that private element. So based on Bernie's positions, it would be interesting to see how much data he's collecting and how intrusive his apps are. So tell us a little bit about what Bernie's doing.
Well, Bernie, actually, his campaign app, it's not nearly as, you know, progressive as some of the other ones. And, you know, that might be a little bit ironic.
So in what way is it less progressive?
Well, you don't actually have to register on his campaign app, which is something that all the other campaign apps require you to do in order to do things like get more information about events and actually to donate. You know, for Bernie, he's not asking for any of that information, really.
So once I download the app, he can just start collecting things, even though the other apps require you to actually make an account or something like that?
The Bernie campaign, I mean, it still has technically the ability to kind of collect all that same information from you, but he's not explicitly like asking for that stuff. You know, he's just, if you want to give Bernie money, you know, he's not going to also ask your email address, actually.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Seems like a basic thing you would ask for. So maybe Bernie's app is on one side of the spectrum where it's less intrusive, which certainly comports with his rhetoric about corporations collecting data. So what would be one of the more intrusive apps? Intrusive being defined not necessarily by anything illegal or them doing anything wrong, but just intrusive in the sense that they collect more information and ask for more information than their peers. So which one would be on the other side of the spectrum if Bernie's on the more privacy-sensitive side?
Well, that is an easy question to answer, and it's Ted Cruz by far. Like his Cruz Crew app it's going to ask you for the basic information that we talked about, but it's also going to ask you to create an account using your Facebook profile. which then is going to give the app access to everything that you've got on that social media platform. And then actually what the Cruise Crew app does additionally is it mines your contacts. So if you know all your contacts on your phone and your friends on Facebook, it's also going to track the information on those profiles and kind of use that to recruit people that they think might be interested in supporting the Cruise campaign.
So while it's very convenient to create an account using Facebook, and you'll see that with a lot of apps that have nothing to do with campaigns, where rather than having to create an account for every single app with a new email address, a new username, a new password, a lot of apps are just giving you the option to say, hey, log in with Facebook. But I guess one thing that doesn't really occur to people when they're doing that is that that gives that app, so the Cruise campaign app, access to your Facebook, which has a lot more information than you would give up if you just gave email, zip code, or an address or something like that.
Right, that's so true. And another thing that Ted Cruz does with your information, once they've gotten all that stuff, you know, that you've inputted into the app and that they've mined from your phone, is they actually give your information to an analytics firm. And the specific one is called Cambridge Analytica. And what's interesting about that firm that I read is it's done a lot of work in psychological warfare. So what Cruz is actually doing is he's taking the information that you're giving him and he's creating a voter profile, which actually allows him to tailor his message in a very specific way to the audiences that he's talking to.
So and by working with firms, they're able to actually make better use of the information, whereas just collecting it and not having the smart people to analyze it, it might be worthless. Now, is there anything, I mean, it sounds creepy, right? And especially for someone like Cruz, who's had that kind of internet meme going around that he looks creepy or sounds creepy or whatever. This is not necessarily the most convenient situation for him. But is there anything really wrong going on? I mean, if I'm a user and I go to a campaign website or I download an app, theoretically, I have clicked something. I've agreed to terms and conditions, and we talk about this on the show a lot, where every time we update iTunes or do basic things like that, we're signing something, and just because we didn't read it doesn't mean it's not a legal document that we signed. So is there anything really wrong about what the campaigns are doing, even if it sounds creepy?
Well, you know, it sounds incredibly creepy, but, you know, to be honest with you, no, they're not doing anything wrong. They've got, you know, privacy policy and terms of service agreements, and you agree to that when you are, you know, when you're putting your information on the website and when you're downloading the app. You know, whether you know it or not, you are agreeing to those terms. And the terms say that basically campaigns can do anything they want with this information.
So yeah, once you've got it, you can you even sell it? So let's say one interesting thing you've brought up in planning for this episode was the idea that someone like Ben Carson, so he ran a campaign that at one point was relatively successful in the polls, probably raised some money, probably built some type of mailing list, and now he's out of the race. And he's not the type of person who's running for another thing, like Rand Paul is going to run to keep his Senate seat, so maybe that makes sense. His presidential data, he'll just keep that going. But he's a doctor, or he's a, you know, he's a surgeon, he's a Fox News commentator, so it's not necessarily obvious that he's got some other office he's running for. So what happens to all this data?
Right, and I actually posed that question to the Carson campaign. I didn't get anything back from them.
Oh, but damn it.
Yeah, I know. But like I said, you know, it's unsure about whether he will, you know, run for public office in the future. So, you know, at this point in time, we don't know what he's going to do with that information. He has endorsed Donald Trump, so it's possible that he could be giving over that information to the Trump campaign.
Well, listeners, if you visited the Carson website or donated money to him, your information might now be in the hands of Donald Trump. So talk about creepy. So Cruz is, you know, you say on one side of the spectrum. Are there other candidates who have used data collection in a way that might be ironic based on statements they've made in the past? I know you bring up Rand Paul. What's his situation like?
Right. So Rand Paul is second to Ted Cruz in the mobile app creepiness factor. It's a lot of the same information that the Cruz app collects, with the exception and the addition that actually the Rand Paul app would request access to your microphone.
Ah, well, that's interesting. I mean, we've seen this with like Samsung TVs where they say, oh, you know, well, we might record things in your house, and yeah, it can sound really creepy. And I know you bring up the irony of someone who was very opposed to renewing the USA Patriot Act without reforms and who's generally been very skeptical about NSA surveillance. However, there is a clear difference, and we've talked about this, between people who voluntarily engage in data collection. Like, I use Gmail, and I know that Gmail is going to scan my email to sell me ads, and that's why I get an amazing product for free. And if I want an email app that doesn't collect data on me, I can pay, and there are options. So even though Rand Paul has been, you know, consistently skeptical of NSA surveillance, is it necessarily a contradiction if in his campaign for president he's abiding by private contractual arrangements that he's made with his supporters?
I do think there's a little bit of a, you know, of a conflict there between his, you know, his thoughts and the actions. You know, when you give your information over to Facebook and Google, you know, you're asking them to, they're asking for your trust with their information. And in return, they are providing what you deem to be a valuable service in exchange for that information. You know, whereas, you know, the people running for president, they're running to be, you know, agents of the federal government. And, you know, the government has a kind of a sketchy relationship with, you know, with your data, you know, between, you know, with the Edward Snowden leaks revealed and, you know, your recent, you know,
recent
government hacks and security breaches. The government's got kind of a, you know, a tenuous relationship with, you know, with data, and that's causing some people, you know, to think, you know, two or three times before they just hand over their information.
So there's certainly an interesting argument to be made there, where if you're entrusting someone like Rand Paul or Bernie Sanders or Ted Cruz to be president, and they're going to be in charge of a lot of cybersecurity policy and data collection policy, and even though they're not necessarily doing anything wrong or illegal, certainly not, in the data collection on the campaign, the way they go about it, the way that they disclose practices to their users, the way they secure the information, that can all be indicative of how they would be as president. And I guess that's why people have gotten so up in arms about the Hillary Clinton email thing, because it really just showed a lack of judgment and a lack of attention to cybersecurity, even if no classified information was leaked, or even if she doesn't get indicted and nothing went wrong, there are people who just say, how could I trust you to be setting cybersecurity and data policy for the country when you were so irresponsible at your job as Secretary of State, or when you were running for president, in the case of Cruz, Paul, Clinton, etc.?
Right, absolutely. And, you know, with the campaigns, you know, gathering all this information, you know, it would make you, you know, kind of speculate about what they might do should they actually, you know, hold this presidential office. You know, what if you were, you know, just happily gathering up my information during the campaign, you know, would you be doing the same thing as president? Would you kind of be, you know, be supporting maybe little sketchy NSA practices? You know, would you be, you know, throwing your support behind, you know, kind of, you know, maybe Patriot Act amendments that are, you know, more intrusive than others?
And just to clarify, there is not a direct connection between what the presidential candidates are doing with data and the NSA, because a skeptical listener might be thinking, well, the government's always collecting my data and the campaigns are collecting my data and a lot of the people who work or running campaigns work for the government. But just to be clear, is there a connection here or no?
There is not a connection. It's two different entities. You know, the NSA and these presidential campaigns are two different entities, you know, but you got to look at the person running the campaign, you know, and if they're head of the campaign and if they're elected president, they're going to be in charge of the NSA. And, you know, this stuff comes from the top down. So you just kind of have to think about that. You know, what are they doing now? And, you know, it's a good indicator of what they might do in the future.
So other than basic FTC privacy rules and the way that they interpret regulations in the country and things like that, are there other policy issues and implications at play here? What sort of regulations exist on what campaigns could do with data? Is the Federal Election Commission involved? Just kind of give us a sense of what this means for tech policy.
So the Federal Elections Commission hasn't specifically said anything about campaign mobile apps and like what, you know, what you can do with the information or actually anything about like the donations. But in 2012, they kind of actually, you know, covered technology, you know, in this respect tangentially, when they set down rules regarding how much you were allowed to donate to candidates via, you know, SMS text messages.
Okay.
And in 2012, the limit was $10 that you could donate via SMS. And so the Obama and Romney campaigns were the first to do that. They didn't disclose like how much information or like how much money they actually raised using SMS text message, but that was kind of like the first foray into this whole thing.
And we're talking about this now, but it's 2016 and campaign data collection is not necessarily a new thing. So when did this kind of come about, and what has the history of big data in presidential campaigns? How has that kind of shaken out since its inception?
Well, I mean, campaigns have had websites for like 20 years now, actually. Bob Dole, a Republican nominee in 2006, was the first one to actually have a...
1996.
I'm sorry, yes.
No
worries. Bob Dole in 1996 was the first candidate to have a website. You know, and ever since then, it's been the standard. And, you know, the technology game has just kind of, you know, just been upped every year since then. Because in 2012, you had the FEC talking about how much you could donate by text messages. And then also that same year, the Obama campaign was the first one to actually launch a mobile app and really take advantage of the whole social media landscape.
Yeah, so what this? So I guess you had, you know, Karl Rove famously, you know, he used a lot of data in 2004, and he kind of, Republicans have kind of lagged behind Democrats in terms of tech in general, but he really certainly had a more primitive version of this. And then, I mean, one of the ironies of President Obama's talk of regulating tech companies and consumer privacy is that no one owes more to big data than President Obama. I mean, think about 2008 and just the incredible way that he used the internet to his advantage, you know, against the 72-year-old John McCain who joked about not being able to send emails and things like that. So, I mean, there is that irony where when the president talks about the Consumer Privacy Bill of Rights and things like that, it's like, well, you know, you kind of benefited from this wild west of data collection yourself. But so are there any drives to really regulate this more? Are there people who are really creeped out about this, or is most of the focus still about, you know, the NSA and big corporations collecting data, not so much about presidential campaigns?
Well, when it comes to the campaigns, I haven't seen anything about, you know, a push for regulation. You know, but the FEC would be in charge of that. But so far, you know, there hasn't been much from them on the issue.
I guess it's ironic that the people that would be in control of our government are kind of getting a free pass on this.
Hey, there's an app for that, so you might as well take advantage of it while you still can.
So what was your biggest takeaway from this research?
My biggest takeaway, well, a couple takeaways. You know, one is that it's just amazing to me that, you know, campaigns are able to actually get this data from people and just do so much with it. You know, if you want to give a campaign your information, you know, you absolutely can do that. But I would think that campaigns just would be, you know, a little more cautious about what they would actually do with your data. I mean, you've agreed to a terms of service and, you know, all of that stuff. And, you know, the privacy policy says that they can more or less do whatever they want. They can give your information to campaign vendors. They can give it to organizations that are kind of in line with the campaign vision. You know, anything. But I would just think they'd be more cautious because they are running for president, and you want to be able to trust the person you're voting for president. And
especially if what you do with that data could then become a political headache down the road, of course.
Right, exactly. You know, I would just think they'd be thinking, you know, more about the ramifications.
Well, maybe it will take some type of scandal or misuse of data, or maybe a cynical use of data like we've seen portrayed in TV shows about politics like Veep, where they did something very cynical with big data where they used it to target recently bereaved parents. And that was a big scandal. And maybe it might take something like that to really get campaigns thinking about it. But maybe in the short term, they're just like, this is so easy. It would be stupid for us not to do this. But that's it for today's show. My guest has been Ashley Holmes, a Tech Freedom intern and grad student at George Washington University's School of International Affairs. Excuse me. Ashley, thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, thanks again for having me.
Follow us on Twitter at Tech Freedom or on Facebook.com/Tech Freedom. Find this podcast in the iTunes store or on your favorite podcast app. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review. It will help us and it will help others find the show. Thank you for listening.
Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.